So I'd like to talk tonight a little bit about how Buddhism evolved over the centuries since its beginning. Original Buddhism is today often referred to as the lesser vehicle, Hinayana, the lesser vehicle, lesser than the Buddhism of today, which really isn't a nice thing to say, but that's the way some people refer to it. The Hinayana, original Buddhism, was called the lesser vehicle. The early monks, Buddha's early monks, and for centuries afterwards, did a very strong, very sincere practice, very, very focused and dedicated. They lived a very ascetic life. They were celibate, lived in community away from the ordinary everyday world, and they had very few possessions. They had their bowl, their begging bowl. They had a razor. They had a few dollars in case when they went on a pilgrimage or if they died on the road, if anybody found them, there would be some money to bury them. They didn't want to put a hardship on whoever found them. They had very few possessions. And they ate very little, one meal a day before noon. They lived a very solitary life, dedicating themselves to non-attachment. The understanding they had about their practice was quite a bit different than today's understanding. By today's understanding, we would say their understanding was limited. But that's not really fair. That's how they started, and that's how they were. The feeling they had was, those early monks, they felt they were kind of a special group. They were the people, they were the monks who did the practice. And everybody else, the lay people, supported them with food or with anything they needed. Ordinary people supported them, and in that way they gained merit. So the monks, by practicing and being supported by the lay people, gave lay people a chance to earn merit through their generosity. The monks of the Hinayana were very focused on saving themselves and putting an end to their own suffering. What they focused on was their own personal salvation by entering into nirvana. There wasn't so much thought about saving others. But over the centuries, Buddhism evolved and took on a different viewpoint of what Buddhism and what practice is. So in Zen practice, in today's Mahayana or greater vehicle, in Zen practice we don't seek personal salvation, you know, for ourself. We may come to practice with that idea in mind, have a purpose or a goal, such as we want wisdom, we want to feel empowered, we want relief from our suffering, or we want to gain a sense of well-being, or we want to be free from the fear of death, something. Generally, we come to practice with wanting to gain something. And it's normal and it's usual because we human beings have many questions about the life we have and many anxieties also. So we come to practice with some some little irritant. But Zen practice, Zen is a spiritual practice. Zen is an expression of our spiritual dimension. And our spiritual dimension is not interested in achieving anything for itself. So Zen practice today is about discovering and expressing our spiritual nature beyond personal concerns, beyond any personal needs we may have. And after we start practice, as the practice ripens, we become more mature with it and more experienced with it. Any anxiety we may have about ourselves and our life, that starts to diminish. We worry less and less about our own well-being. So, in other words, self-concerns lose their grip on our mind as we continue Zazen. And that's a relief. The mind widens and encompasses more and more. Its viewpoint becomes wider and wider. It's like the fog that covers everything. Dogen, the founder of Zen school in Japan, he quoted an ancient Chinese teacher, and Suzuki Roshi repeated it in his book. And Dogen said, "Your practice is like walking in the fog or the dew. Although you do not actually wet your garment, it gradually becomes damp." And if you drive north, if you drive to San Francisco on Highway 280 on a nice day, you may see the fog coming in over the mountains, and it's beautiful, you know. We enjoy seeing the fog coming over the Coast Range, soft and white, puffy. Gives us a very peaceful feeling. And with practice, our mind develops this feeling. The fog still is a good metaphor for a description of our practice. Our practice today includes the same discipline as a Hinayana practice. Same self-discipline. Continuous practice, everyday practice. We are dedicated to our practice without hesitation. That hasn't changed over the more than 2,000 years. That dedication has not changed. But this discipline, these days, in our practice, this discipline is accompanied by a very generous mind. In other words, our practice emphasizes the Bodhisattva way, which was a later development in Buddhism. The compassionate giving way of the Bodhisattva. It includes an encompassing mind and a very accepting attitude as a way to live, as a way to be in the world. Later this evening, when we close out, we have a little chant that we do, and part of it includes we save all beings. Saving all beings. This is part of our vow. This is one of the four vows, saving all beings. And when you're new to practice or a visitor comes and hears this chanted, I vow to save all beings. They say, how do you do that? Pretty big job. How do you do that? The starting point of that, saving all beings, is to recognize that this so-called saving is not about others only. That is a dualistic idea, that there are others and then there's me. That's a dualistic idea. In the same way that saving just ourself is dualistic. So if we say, I have to save all beings, means we separate ourselves from all beings. Have to save them. So this is not quite right. All beings includes ourself. So when we chant, I vow to save all beings, it has to start here. And when it starts here, then it can extend there. So saving all beings has to start with ourself. It starts with our practice. Through discipline and letting the mind be wide and soft. We save ourselves by being less and less concerned for gain, for obtaining substantial things of the everyday world. We start to lose our interest in that. Instead, we begin to appreciate and to see the very insubstantial nature of all things, much like the cloud. As we see this true nature of things, their unsubstantiality, then we understand the meaning of emptiness. And then selflessness arises very naturally. You don't have to force ourselves to be generous and selfless as we see the insubstantiality of things. Selflessness arises naturally, and the mind then turns towards others. Then the question of how do you save all beings is no more question. You have no more question about it. We cannot force our mind to be selfless. We can't scold it if it's not selfish. We can't force it to be selfless. And we cannot force our mind to be happy. But the happiness that we seek is very elusive because or when we look backward. Our difficulty in the way we approach our situations, usually we look backward. We look backward for the cause of our anxiety or the cause of our unhappiness. And we feel, if I know the cause of my unhappiness, I can resolve it and I can put it to rest. So the usual way in the world we live in right now is to consider the past, try to dig up the past, to uncover the source, to resolve the mystery of our unhappiness or anxiety. So you may recall old relationships and try and relive unhappy events and experiences to try to understand what is it that's troubling me. This is a backward-looking psychology, and usually not conscious. Our practice, Zen practice, is a much different approach to relieving suffering. No looking back. We start by observing our relationship with ourself, observing our relationship with our everyday self and with our true self or true nature. We observe our relationship with ourself and we begin to notice our biases and our habits and how we create suffering. So no looking back to try to identify who or what created my suffering. We look at ourselves and how we are living in the world to understand how we ourselves create suffering through our own misunderstanding. So exploring past relationships is looking backwards, but emphasizing Buddha nature, which is always here. There's no looking back. We don't look back. So, Zen practice is forward-looking. Not backward-looking. Forward-looking. I don't mean forward-looking meaning just looking at the wall. Forward-looking in attitude. In other words, if we have some difficulty or some concern or some anxiety, we don't blame the past. We don't blame someone in the past or some event in the past. We look forward. And that means we let go being concerned with the question, why am I unhappy? Instead, we practice so that we are ready to take care of whatever comes up in this moment or the next moment. And we develop the attitude and the confidence that says, whatever it is that comes up, I will take care of it. We sometimes have to remind ourselves that I have some intelligence. I can be creative. I have some experience. Whatever comes up, I take care of it. This is how our practice looks forward. So we keep awareness on our breath and we keep awareness on how our mind is doing, and we are ready to go forward from this point. This is the selfless attitude. This is the attitude of the serious Zen student. So the opposite of selflessness, as we know, is to be self-oriented. The self-oriented mind is always on drugs. The self-oriented mind is addicted to its own desires and to its own anxieties and addicted to its own salvation. So if we engage in a selfish activity or an ungenerous activity, it's like taking an intoxicant, because that little bit of selfishness maybe feels relief from some kind of anxiety. Or if we act selfishly, it may give us some kind of rush of excitement. Or maybe we feel the thrill of being admired or respected when we do things that are not generous. But as Dogen said, you do not deserve the respect of others unless you have true virtue within yourself. Why are people addicted to the drug of selfishness? We know many people that are addicted to the drug of selfishness. It's because they don't know themselves in the deepest sense, and they don't understand the source of happiness or the source of fulfillment. They don't understand that. So they feel the need to intoxicate themselves to be happy. And of course we know it doesn't last. The Bodhisattva mind comprehends that selflessness is happiness. Generosity is happiness. It's not that selflessness leads to happiness, it's that selflessness is happiness inherently. But the usual understanding of happiness that we hear about in the modern world is not the Bodhisattva understanding of happiness. So the usual belief that is promoted these days over and over and over again, the usual belief is that we need to acquire something in order to be happy. We need to acquire something in addition to what we have in order to be happy. We see it all the time. It's in newspapers and magazines and the television. You need this, you need this, you need this. And so we are conditioned to believing, I can be happy if I get this one more thing. But that's based on a sense of feeling incomplete. As if something is being withheld from us, or something has been withheld from us in the past, or taken away from us by somebody or some event. If we analyze our life with this idea, we are trying to identify something that we were not given, or something that was taken away, or here is something new that I now have the opportunity to gain for myself. And if we attach to that viewpoint, I need something to be complete, we may start to grieve for what we lost, or what was taken away, or what seems to be out of reach. We grieve for it, and that leads to suffering and selfishness. The Bodhisattva mind, the mind of a experienced and serious Zen student, is that we already have everything. We already have everything that we need. There are no gaps. There are no gaps today, and there never will be any gaps in what we have. There's nothing we lack. When we have that understanding, then there's selflessness. Zen is the practice of lacking nothing. And that's what the Hinayana monks practiced. Hardly any possessions, hardly any activity that provides excitement or pleasure. Very strict. Selflessness is happiness, both for ourself and for others. Selflessness means there's no competition, no personal competition, no philosophical confusion, and no scheming, no need to act in those ways that create worries. But here's one more saying, one more quote from Dogen. The foolish believe that their own interests will suffer if they put the benefit of others first. But they are wrong, however. Benevolence is all-encompassing, equally benefiting self and others. Equally benefiting self and others. So, the Bodhisattva, the serious Zen student, does not act in isolation. The Zen student's activity includes everything else, everyone and everything else. We don't do things in isolation, separate. But it is difficult. It takes work, it takes some effort. It's hard to break this unconscious habit of looking back for the source of our problem. It's a habit that we have to learn to let go. Our practice is to develop the capacity to always look forward.